is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. Seth Cox is with me, as is almost always the case, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the SB Nation family of sites, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. And we're recording on a Wednesday night instead of a Tuesday night because of some family stuff, and we will... Just a reminder, programming note, is that next week we will not have a show. Our next show will be in 2 weeks, as we will do our free agency preview. This is episode 347. Seth, how was... So, they were Seth and Justin, who joined us for our Senior Bowl recap, recorded their most recent edition of the show just before... And Seth jumped on here, so his new episode will be headed out, you know, Thursday afternoon. Seth, what do you got coming on that next show?
You know, we did our first like pre-combine mock draft, so we can get some takes out of the way before the combine throws everything into flux again. Obviously, you know, you do a post-combine mock, you do a which is kind of technically the pre-free agency mock, and then you come back and you do a post-free agency mock, and then you kind of do your last one. So, but we talked about, you know, what, not just what we're hearing, but what our thoughts are on some of the guys. Justin ended up getting to make the pick for the Cardinals, and he had us taking big Jordan Davis, and he really debated between Jordan Davis and Zion Johnson because, you know, the other guys that we really like are all gone. So, you know, and that's a tough one. I mean, you and I will talk about it as we get there. That's one of those situations where you can make a strong case for either of those guys, right? Jordan Davis, put him in the middle as a true nose tackle, and your run defense should immediately improve. And then obviously Zion Johnson, you slot him in at right guard to start this year. He's a guy that, you know, at the Senior Bowl was maybe the most dominant offensive lineman at the Senior Bowl. And so you have those choices, and that's one of the things you get to do that's kind of fun. You know, you give yourself those choices, and how would you do it as the guy? And then, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, we figure out, oh, that was the wrong choice. But, you know, for now, that's what we did tonight and discussed some of the guys and picks and decisions we made.
So was this your regular, your free show or your bonus show?
It's a bonus show, but we're going to open it up to everybody because we did drop our first mock draft. We didn't give away everything, so you gotta subscribe to get the full mock draft. But we talked about some of the interesting things, you know. For instance, I don't know if you saw Daniel Jeremiah's newest mock draft, but they had like Trevor Penning going 6th overall.
Holy cow!
And Justin and I had him going 26th overall to the Tennessee Titans, and it's like, man, I'd feel way more comfortable taking Trevor Penning at 26 than I would at 6.
It's interesting to see, because, you know, Daniel Jeremiah is interesting because he's not exactly an insider. He does have this scouting background, but he hears chatter, and so and his stuff changes, because right now he still doesn't have all the chatter, but he doesn't have the combine numbers. He hasn't had contact with this, some of the teams are saying, but those guys I like to look at those mock drafts. Back when Mike Mayock was, you know, was not pre-GM of the Raiders, we'll see what happens with him in moving forward, but his mock drafts, he always felt carried a little bit more weight because it seemed like there was some insider stuff that was unsaid.
Right, exactly. And that's what makes it fun, right?
Yeah, totally. But this edition of the show, this is one of our pre-free agents. This is not a free agent preview, but we're going to focus on what the Cardinals need to do with the players that they've got. So we're gonna look at cost-cutting moves that could work, whether we would do them or not, because the Cardinals are projected to be a little bit over the cap when the new league year begins, so they will need to make some moves. And then we're going to take a look at their own free agents, the players that are set to hit free agency, and discuss whether it's got to re-sign, like to re-sign, doesn't matter if they re-sign, that sort of thing. But just not looking at the rest of the market, but just looking at the Cardinals on the roster. So let's go ahead and get started with that, episode 347. And what we've got now is the Cardinals are expected to be about $800,000 over the cap based on some of the most recent numbers by Over the Cap. They were a little bit under it, but thanks to some performance boosters for their fourth-year salary, Byron Murphy, Zach Allen, and Jalen Thompson, because of their playing time, have added bumps to their salary. So they get essentially what a restricted free agent tender would earn. That's one of those things where if we're rounds 2 through 7, because the undrafted guys get 3-year contracts and then can be a restricted free agent and get paid more, this is a clause that allows for the contributing draft picks on days 2 and 3 to get that same financial benefit that the undrafted rookies can. And that is actually what put the Cardinals over the cap moving forward. So the Cardinals have, as we know, which is really unfortunate with the situation, we've talked about the needs the Cardinals had in our previous show, the positional needs. They have a lot of needs, but they have almost no money against the cap, so they're going to have to do stuff. So what we're going to go down is some of the costs, some of the high-end cost-cutting moves they can do. I'll bring them up. We'll discuss whether they should, whether it's viable and whether they should do that move. So let's start off. The one that would save them the absolute most money would be cutting DJ Humphreys. It would save them $15 million against the cap. It'd leave a little more than $4 million in dead money, but it would also be cutting their left tackle and one of their captains. But to get this out of the way, the reason I bring up, it's not a suggestion, okay? It's not a suggested thing they should do this, but this is a possibility. If we're trying to free up money, this is the one that does the most. So DJ Humphreys for $15 million, if you're just going to straight cut him, they have their options, but would you cut him and then go a different route at left tackle to save money?
You know, I think that is one of the things where you approach him for an extension first type of thing. When you say, hey, we'll go another, could you extend him for 4 years and $60 million?
Yeah, and that would cut down this year's cap. I mean, you're kicking the can down the line, which is what the Cardinals tend to do, kicking that can down the line for the cap hit. But you know, you found a left tackle that's extension wise, it makes sense because you found a left tackle that you are very happy with. He wasn't. Greatly, he was great in 2020. He was good last year and had.
Well, and that's why, I mean, people might be like $60 million for DJ Humphrey.
They keep saying like $15 million a year is too much for a good left tackle. No, it's not. the deal that he got, the $15 million per year, if he's playing at a near Pro Bowl level, and he was a Pro Bowler this year. Now, granted, he was an injury replacement. He should have been a Pro Bowl last year. He made the Pro Bowl this year of an injury replacement. Pro Bowl tackles make more than $15 million a year. They just do.
Right, and that's just what it is. I mean, you look at, like, you're talking about Pro Bowl, right? Like, you're saying a guy that is good. The market value for Cam Robinson, who I do not believe has ever had a Pro Bowl under his belt, is $17 million a year. So, I mean, his projected salary is about 4 years and $68 million.
Yeah, that's crazy. And Cardinals fans, like, at least Cardinals fans, like, in air quotes, in terms of what we see on Twitter, they're like, you know, it's just too high a number to keep DJ. Okay, your other option is this. Okay, and maybe they can survive 1 year of it, but it really affects their depth. You could cut DJ Humphries. You've got Kelvin Beachum, who's been a left tackle pretty much his entire career before coming to the Cardinals. He filled in decently at left tackle. You could slide him over to the left side. That allows Josh Jones to be your starter on the right side. Cuts, you know, you could have an adequate line like that. The issue is when
you have no depth.
One, and the internal implications to that, because you have a guy that's coming off a Pro Bowl year who is a team captain, and then you just cut. That right. doesn't go well in the locker room. So if you're going to do a cost-cutting move, like extending DJ makes sense. Paying him $15 million per year is not too much. He's a fringe Pro Bowl tackle, and that's great.
But even more than that, I think what people need to understand is those are the numbers, man. I mean, you're talking about a guy in Cam Robinson who's hurt as much as DJ is, who hasn't played as well in his career as DJ, getting $17 million. You're talking about a guy in Teron Armstead, again, that's 100% better than DJ. So I want everybody to understand, I believe Teron Armstead is better than DJ Humphries. Now, we've gotten that out of the way. He's been just as injured and nicked up over his career, especially the last couple of years. And he is on pace to get $24 million a year.
Oh my gosh. Well, and here's the thing. If this is worth anything,
by the way, he's never played a full 16 games entire career. So, I mean, that's to your point. Like, he will be 31 this year. So you're talking 4 years, $96 million for Teron Armstead. And Jess and I are saying, hey, do you think you could get Humphries for 460? You may not even be able to get him for that.
It's true. It's quite possible that the market, that he would ask for more for an extension. I don't know what it's worth, but for if you like a kind of measure of how good a player is, on Pro Football Reference, they have the approximate value, which is their attempt to attach a single number to every player's season since 1960. His 2021 season was better than his 2020 season. Now, the metrics will say he was better in 2020 than 2021, but his approximate value in 2019 and 2020 were both an 8, and this past season was a 13. Whatever that means. Maybe it's because he made the Pro Bowl, but whatnot. So, you know, the cost-cutting move, that there's probably, while it cuts the most money, it might do the most damage in terms of what it does to the roster. Because, you know, if you're cutting DJ Humphries, you have to replace him with a left tackle, and you're not guaranteed to get. And if you think you're going to get a better tackle than DJ Humphries, you're going to be paying for it unless you hit in the draft as a rookie, which we know is probably not going to happen based on what we've seen.
Right. And let's be fair, too. You're drafting 23. So typically when you draft 23, those guys are a year or two away. So, you know, that's what I look at it. I think, you know, here's what I'll say. You throw the offer out there. You say 3 years. Heck, even if you give him a raise and you say 3 years, you know, and say $60 million, and you're like, $20 million a year for DJ Humphries. I mean, we just went over it. Cam Robinson's getting 17, and Teron Armstead's getting 24. So 19 to 20 is right in the middle of that, right? Like, that's right in the middle of where DJ deserves to be. That's the market. Whether or not you agree with it or not, I'm sorry to tell you, it doesn't matter. But that's the market. So, yeah, you start there. You know, so like you said, do you cut DJ Humphries? I say you offer him an extension. If that doesn't work, that's where you come up and you say, okay, like, what is it going to take? What do we need to do? Or we're going to cut you. And you know, he may be willing to call their bluff, right? He may be the guy that's willing to say, hey, prove it. You know, where are you going to go find somebody as good as me for that kind of money? And the truth of the matter is you're not. Oh. I mean, you're just flat out.
You're going to get a journeyman. You're going to get a fill-in Kelvin Beecham who could play all right.
For a year may give you similar. But now again, remember this, and Jess just said this. Let's say best case scenario, they're at $0, which right now we believe in the hole a little bit, but they're at $0. You cut DJ Humphries, you're at $15 million and you need a left tackle.
Yes, absolutely. So you move on to the next guy, and it's still on the offensive line. It's Justin Pugh, who interestingly has been a pretty solid lineman for the last four seasons for the Cardinals. The 1 year at right guard was a little bit messy, and then he got hurt. But he took a pay cut last year, and his contract basically is forcing you to make a decision. He's got a $1 million roster bonus due in March, and his cap hit is going to be a little less than $12 million, $11.8 million. Cutting him saves $9.8 million, nearly $10 million, but there'll be $2 million dead money. But, again, he's one of your better linemen that fills a hole at left guard. Especially if you end up cutting him, then you've got two question marks, both at left guard and right guard. What do you do there? Now, I think this is a possibility. I think if between DJ and Justin Pugh, I think Pugh is the most likely cut candidate. When he took that pay cut last year and added that $1 million roster bonus for this year, it felt like that's what was going to happen. Now, let's be clear. He is under contract, and the Cardinals probably like him, despite, unfortunately, John Gambadoro came out and said he's going to be a free agent. Well, if he's going to be a free agent, it's because he's going to get him cut. They would like him back. Maybe they try and renegotiate, like do kind of the cut and then re-sign. You probably, I don't know, maybe, well, at least how cap structures work, you probably could go out and get a better guard at less money against the cap this year, but it wouldn't be moving forward.
Yeah, and so that's what you got to look at is so you cut Justin Pugh, let's add DJ back. So instead of being at almost $25 million, we're at just under $10 million in cap savings.
Yeah.
You know, so you're at 9.8-ish. All right, so where are you getting a guard, and are you comfortable going the J.R. Sweezy route for $4.5 million, $5 million? Because that thing is like, okay, you want to bring in a guard, are you going to go get Brandon Scherff? By the way, Brandon Scherff's going to be 31 this year and is going to command $13 million a year. You know, are you going to go get I'm trying to look who else is available. Like, again, when it's much easier to cut somebody if you say, hey, we've got, you know, and they do have Justin Murray, but like, hey, we got a young Justin Murray who we really like waiting in the wings. Let's go grab him. You know, maybe you can get like a Lincoln Tomlinson from the 49ers at $5.5 million, maybe. You know, you go get a, jeez, none of all these names are so bad, dude.
Tomlinson was an intriguing one, but you know, is he significantly better than Pugh, and is it going to be for less money?
How many years? Yeah. Well, and you look at it like Austin Corbett was the starting guard for the Rams, right?
Yeah.
He's projected 4 years, $36 million. Okay, so you save $9.8 million to spend $9 million. James Daniel is the young stud from Chicago. Okay, so he's projected at $7.5 million. So you save $9.8 million to spend $7.5 million. Now, are you upgrading that position? That's what you have to ask yourself. Like, is James Daniels outside of age, that big of an upgrade at the position? And so if your answer is yes, then yeah, cut him and go put, you know, go get James Daniels for $8 million a year. And obviously they'll probably end up kicking that can down the road where, you know, they're not paying him that $8 million for a couple of years, right?
Yeah. So whatever happens, if they sign a big contract to a guard that first year, the cap hit's going to be minimal-ish because that's
probably,
just how the script...
Probably between 2.5 and 4 million tops.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and that's the thing is like, so we're walking through the market range, right? So we've talked about, you know, Austin Corbett and James Daniel are your Justin Pugh range of guys, right? Like they're the guys that you're going to get the similar ability and production from them as you did Pugh. If you want to get a superior player, like a high-end guard, it's $13 million, and you're talking about a guy like Connor Williams. So like those are, you know, those are the numbers like you have to understand. So, you know, are you going to cut Pugh to go sign a, you know, an Alex Kappa from the Buccaneers for $11 million a year? Like, can you afford to do that? Because now you're actually spending more money to replace a player. So that's the question you got to ask. I think if you're able to restructure these guys, that's got to be your first priority over cutting them, because it's not just the cutting to save cap space. And how do you replace them?
Yes. The next guy is a no-brainer. It's very disappointing to me. I thought he was a perfect fit for the team at the perfect position. Devon Kennard wasn't cut last year because his numbers were fully guaranteed. His cap hit is more than $9 million in 2022, but he's, you know, number three, number four at outside linebacker on the depth chart, and cutting him will save nearly $5 million in cap space. However, because of how they structured the signing bonus and then some restructuring to make room for, you know, other contracts, it will create $4.2 million in dead money. That said, if they choose to post June 1st cut him or designate him as such, then it would increase the savings to $7 million with $2.1 million dead money for each of the next two seasons. But I think I think Kennard is a lock to be cut. As much as they like him, the player and the person, the role that he plays just doesn't warrant the amount of money they're paying him. And that is, for me, is a disappointment, because I thought he would have been the perfect from the other side of Chandler Jones, based on what we saw in his production when he was playing kind of that 4-3 outside backer position instead.
Yeah, and I would agree. He's going to be cut. You don't want to say he's got to go, but he's got to go.
This one's tricky. Jordan Phillips, big disappointment, not because of his play, but because of his injury. And the one that this kind of signals is the fact that it looked like he was healthy for the playoff game and then was a healthy scratch. The issue is they restructured his deal for Zach Ertz trade to make his Ertz cap contract fit. And so Phillips's cap hit's going to be more than $13 million, but there's $9 million of dead money.
Yeah, you're only saving
$4 million.
$4 million. It's crazy.
But
super baffling, right?
Post June 1st designation, it would free up $10 million. And then there would be about $3 million in dead money this year, and basically the rest of the dead money would be spread out over the next three seasons because they have those void years. And so the post June 1st is probably the route. I have heard from people who have heard that Phillips will be cut, and based on what I've heard from people who've heard, that it will be a post June 1st move, which then creates another need on the defensive line, of course.
Yep. And so then from there you look at it. All right. So you saved, you know, with the post-June 1 designations for Kennard and Phillips, you saved a little bit more, but still not a ton. So that takes you to the next guy. And this feels like it should be a lock, but I want to get your opinion on Jordan Hicks.
He's a tough one for me. Now, it makes sense money-wise.
And what they've invested it in the draft, like it, all of it makes sense. But he's still their best linebacker.
He is, and a team captain. What happened last offseason was really rough, and then we started the year playing really well, and he had a good year. It'll save the team $6.5 million of cap space. You'll have $3 million of dead money, basically wrapping up that contract, because this is the last year of his deal. Here's my take on this. You draft A.S. Simmons and Zaven Collins. As long as Jordan Hicks is on this roster, he's going to be playing ahead of Collins, because, dadgummit, Hicks is going to make it happen, because he's going to know the defense better. He's going to know the calls, and he's got the trust of his linebackers coach and Billy Davis, who's coached him for years, and also his defensive coordinator in Vance Joseph. He's got an in with the coach, like, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, really kind of soft, smooth things out with Hicks during the season, when a tough situation from the offseason. It feels like if they are intent on Zaven Collins being a major player or having a big role in 2022, you can't have Jordan Hicks on the roster. It's just, to me, that's what it comes down to. You either change the scheme to play a 4-3 so that all three linebackers can be on the field, or you cut Hicks, because that's the only way you can do it.
Yeah, and so that makes it tough. You know, so let's just say for S&Gs during this little experiment that they make these moves. The ones that hit right up front, right, Hump, Pugh, and Hicks, that's right around 35 million, call it. Or sorry, 32 million, sorry. 32 million. You gotta then put June 1 cut Phillips and Kennard to get the savings out of it that you possibly can, right?
Yeah.
And you're still at about 50 million.
And that's, but some of that you have to carry for a while. That's the issue.
Right. And so that's the thing. It's like you're in a weird spot where it's not even really doing that much for you. So I think the better way to go about it is you got to renegotiate Humphreys. Because that's the thing, too, is like when you look at the cuts, if you cut your left tackle and your left guard, you have to pay money for one of them. I'm not going to say you have to pay money for both, but you have to pay money and get somebody, right?
Right. There. I mean, it's not like at least can count on Beecham at left tackle, but there ain't no one who's ready to slide in and play at least at the same level as Pugh on the roster at left guard.
Right. So you've got to replace all of those guys. You've got to, like you said, you've got to replace your best defensive, or not your best, but your biggest defensive lineman. And you've got to hope that those rookies or young linebackers start to make plays, right?
Yeah.
So all of that comes from a lot of different, you have to replace those positions, and that's easier said than done. So, you know, if you're able to renegotiate Humphreys and, you know, cut his number down this year to 5 million. So it's, you know, it's about a 10 million or less cap hit, or sorry, you're a 10 million or more cap saving, 10 to 15 million cap savings. If you're able to do similar with Justin Pugh, and Pugh is going to be a little more difficult because it's going to be that situation where you're just asking him to take a pay cut, right? Like you're going to be like, hey.
Which would be the second year in a row he's done it.
Right. And then you, but that's the thing. Then you release Kennard, Phillips, and Hicks, and the only money savings you're really getting is that 6.5 from Hicks. And so you still need to create a bunch of cap space. So yeah, I mean, because you go through the list, like, you're obviously not going to cut DeAndre Hopkins.
No, and honestly, you can't because of the dead money. Like, right. it all of it's guaranteed. JJ Watt,
takes money away from you.
Yeah. Buddha, you could restructure Buddha because their salaries jump up. So Buddha's salary goes up to $11 million. There's a couple of smaller moves. Justin Murray, you cut him, you save $2.2 million. Andy Isabella is going to get cut at some point. Interesting one. What about this guy, Matt Prater? You can save $3.5 million, but then you got to get a good kicker.
Well, and you know, you brought up Prater. That's a great one, by the way. What about Rodney Hudson? You go make a third round trade for him. His cap hit is $12.5 million. But here's the crazy thing: you cut him, you only save $4.5 million.
Yeah, so might be able to restructure him, push some money down the line.
But so that's the thing, is like, you know, Rodney, you can't really cut him because at that point you're having to guarantee that you get an as good of a player, and you're going to have to pay $4 million or less. And so basically you're just cutting him to not have him on the roster. And by the way, Jess brought this up. You know, this is a phenomenal point. He was a captain as well, wasn't he?
If he wasn't a captain, he was the most important offensive lineman on the team.
But, so, I mean, can you imagine if they cut
Hicks? Oh, Hicks, Hudson, Humphreys.
And Humphreys.
Oh, that's really bad juju in the locker room. Because it's different when you don't re-sign a guy. Okay? That's business. When you just don't re-sign a guy like Patrick Peters, when you don't re-sign a guy like Chandler Jones, we're going to talk about, when you don't re-sign Calais Campbell, they're free agents. That's not taking your captain and cutting him when there's no one to replace. Like Hicks, maybe like Hicks. The Hicks is the one move that makes sense because you supposedly have his replacement. If you're cutting Humphreys, if you're cutting Pugh, if you're cutting Hudson, you don't have a replacement for him. And that doesn't go well in the locker room. That just doesn't. That's bad juju. And that would be tough for Kliff to have to deal with, because we know that Kliff doesn't actually make cuts. That's Steve Keim.
Right, exactly. So it's, you know, it is a super interesting way to look at it. Man, it's tough, man. Like, they've put themselves, I mean, I tweeted it the other day. You look at this Cardinals roster and the fact that they're broke and then they have so many needs. It is.
They really needed to do better this year.
Yeah, they really needed to finish better.
That's kind of what almost what they were banking on, which was weird to do, to kind of throw it all in 2021 and not leave any wiggle room for 2022. But the cap is a myth. We know this. You can like, it's just that. How the salary cap works essentially is this: you can finagle the contract all you want, you're going to have to pay for it one day. So that signing bonus, you're going to have that hit against the cap no matter what happens. It's when you kick that can down the line bad far enough.
Right, exactly. So, you know, overall, I don't see any of these, you know, outside of the obvious ones that we talked about, you know, I don't see any of them going. You can't cut Rodney. You can't. Prater's the most interesting.
That's a tough one, because when everything's right, there's no one better. But it was so odd how bad he was if you changed up anybody in his battery.
Right. And with what's going on with Andy Lee, because Lee is a free agent as well.
He is. Well, we will get to that. We will get to that in this.
And so, like, And we don't know, but like, what if he doesn't want to come like play anymore? What if he's just ready? Because he's almost 40, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah. I think he's 30. I think he's 38. But I mean, yeah, it depends on what he wants to do. I mean, who wouldn't want to punt for another year? I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, so coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to go through different position groups, the Cardinals, the free agents on their roster. We're going to talk about whether they should bring him back or not. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We are now here to talk about the free agents at each position group. We'll look at, before we take our next break, we'll go quarterback, running back, wide receiver, some important ones. The offensive side of the ball is kind of a mess because they have six key skill players plus their backup quarterback who are all set to be free agents. And so the first one that we come up on is the quarterback that is a free agent is Colt McCoy. Is he a guy that you resign?
What did he make last year?
He made a league minimum. He had his cap hit was small because he had a league minimum with a certain thing. It was one of those veteran minimum contracts. So his cap hit was about little under, I think, $900,000. And he made a little more than $1 million.
Would you, I know this is going to be crazy, but would you do like a 3-year deal for him?
I mean, I think so. The problem is like, 35 years old.
Right. And so basically that'll take him to retirement. So you're looking at,
I'd do 2 years, 2 years. I bet 2 years will do the trick.
2 years, like $6 million.
Or even I bet with any amount, 2 years, four might do the job.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. I would, I mean, he's proven that he does everything that you need and want in a backup.
I don't think you're going to find a better backup. I think that's the thing. There were equals to him, and we saw the high end Colt McCoy when he filled in for Kyler Murray in 2 or 3 games. He was hey, you think he could be a starter, but we know he can't sustain that as a 35-year-old journeyman quarterback throughout the NFL. But in terms of backup quarterbacks, it's going to be really hard to find someone better. In terms of preparation, smarts, ability to make plays when he needs to, and also the value in the locker room with a guy like Kyler Murray. But we've also seen Colt McCoy down, because remember, when the Cardinals, Hassan Reddick's 5-sack game? Yeah, that was Daniel Jones and Colt McCoy.
Right.
That was a disaster game for the Giants that game. So, but yes, Steve Keim said Colt McCoy is a priority. I don't think at this point in his career he's going to command a whole lot of money because he's old. But he is a priority. But at the same time, there are other, like if you could get a guy like him, I'm not saying Blaine Gabbert. No, I think he's making more money in Tampa than he would make here. There are quarterbacks out there you could bring in that do the same thing. I think the value that Colt McCoy also brings is because he already comes in with an attaché of respect from Kyler Murray because of who Colt McCoy is in terms of, a guy that Kyler watched growing up. He was a stud in Texas football.
I think that's a fair assessment.
We move on to the running backs, and we look at, so Jonathan Ward is an exclusive rights free agent. He's going to be back as long as the Cardinals want him back. He's going to be back because if they extend him a tender, he can't sign anywhere else. The only reason would be he'd go elsewhere is if the Cardinals decide not to re-sign him, which I don't know why they wouldn't because they like him. He plays special teams. They like his size. They like the potential. But the big names here, James Conner and Chase Edmonds, are both free agents. If you had your choice, would you sign both? Neither? And if you had to pick one, who would it be?
Oh man, Connor, I think is where you have to go with that.
I agree. Cliff wants both back, and it'll depend on how much money they're willing to commit to the running back position for at least 1 year. But if you end up signing both, I don't think either one of them will accept only a 1 year deal. They will get a multi-year deal somewhere.
Would you do 321 for Connor?
I would, and that's because you see, and I think I said this on another show that we did, and I think that Edmonds is a you can find Edmonds, a guy that can do the things that Edmonds does more easily because of his size. You can find Chase Edmonds in other guys. Connor, you get kind of the full package with a big body, which adds to that. And ideally, I'm not saying he's as good as Chase Edmonds, but I think with a guy like, you know, Benjamin on the roster, there's the potential that he could do Chase Edmonds-like things. Maybe. But you've got a guy on the roster that potentially could do that.
Yeah, and I would agree with that.
And then we look at this. This is the other kind of the very difficult one. We're going to look at wide receiver. And they've got Antoine Wesley. He's an exclusive rights. He'll be back. And just as long as we're not counting on him to be the wide receiver too, you know, I don't mind him on the roster. I really like what he added. But AJ Green, Christian Kirk, are you signing one, both, or neither?
Probably neither. You know, I feel like Kirk is the first guy they're reasonably ready to replace. So given that, I wouldn't bring him back. You know, Green, that's market value, $7 million. Ugh. I mean, would you give him a 2-year, $15 million deal? I wouldn't.
That's a hard one. He produced, like, Cliff Kingsbury sounded like a guy who felt like, who would like to have him back because he felt like he underutilized him. But we also saw some aloofness from AJ that I think might have been, like, he might have been one of those guys that Kyler didn't love in terms of intensity. The 50-plus catches for over 800 yards, that's about as good as we could have really honestly anticipated from him. And he was inconsistent at that, so it could have been way better.
So, and then Kirk at $12 million a year, would you do a you know, 4, 48, 5, 6?
Ooh,
I just feel like you finally are prepared to move on.
That's true. There's a scenario here. So I could see this happening. It changes kind of the dynamic, but from the talk that with Rondale Moore, there is some talk of using him outside more. Now, granted, we see that how he was used. And we knew, honestly, we knew this was going to be that. He wasn't getting a ton of play at time, and because of the role in the offense, he was only going to get gadget stuff. But they really like what they think he can do. What if they put more at the Z? And obviously he doesn't give you the, like, he's primarily the Z. And then you re-sign Kirk to play on the slot where you know you're going to get productive play. And the, honestly, if he's playing exclusively on the slot with DeAndre Hopkins, I think he'll have a fantastic year. And people just need, Kirk's going to have a long and productive career. It won't be the career that I think we all wanted to see him become, like the Fitzgerald replacement, which was unfair. But I could see a scenario where they kind of anticipate more being that number, the Z. Chris should play in the slot, and then your wide receiver four is Wesley, who then could play the Z in four wide sets, where you put Rondell and Christian Kirk inside both. That said, I think it's probably more likely that they don't sign either. I think Kirk will simply price himself out, and Green, they would rather get someone more consistent, maybe?
Yeah, and probably younger, too.
Yeah.
You probably don't want a 34-year-old and a 30-year-old as your top two receiving options.
Right. I want to get a replacement for Green. We think you might have a replacement for Kirk, but I'm intrigued by the more as an outside receiver, especially what you see from a guy like Tyreek Hill. I know it's really unfair to say have him be Tyreek Hill, but I think Moore has that potential.
He has that ability. It doesn't mean he's going to ever reach it, but he has that ability.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web, we'll move to the next group of players. We're going to talk about the tight ends and the offensive linemen. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. The best of our Cardinals talk on the web. The tight end position, they have almost nobody. They've got two. They've got three guys signed to futures deals. Bernhard Seikewitz, their German player, their Austrian player, David Wells, a practice squad dude, and then Deion Yelder. Darrell Daniels, Zach Ertz, Demetrius Harris, Max Williams, all unrestricted free agents. What do you do with those four players? Do you bring any of them back? And if you had to choose between them, who are they?
Yeah, I think you bring back at least one of them, and then you look to add a guy in either the draft or free agency for the other. You know, we talked about a little bit, but like if you bring back Ertz, you're probably looking at 2 years, $15 million. And if you bring back Max Williams, you're looking at 2 years, $10 million. And so you might say, well, okay, you bring back Max Williams, and you and I are big fans of Max. So
the problem he's had one healthy year. That's the one thing you worry about with him. He's had one healthy year.
Yeah, so if you come in with Max Williams and then you bring back Daniels on a cheap contract, and then you know you draft, say you go get the best tight end, Trey McBride, right? So and so now all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, we got Max, he's our blocking tight end, you know, we've got kind of our two-way guy in Daniels, and then we got McBride to replace Ertz, so we're good. And then Williams gets hurt, you're like, okay, now we don't have any blocking tight end. You know, and so that's the point. And not that's you can say that about every player, and that's true, but like Ertz is a guy that's rarely been nicked up in his career, right? And so if you're talking about $3 to $5 million difference, and for a guy that is, we know what Ertz is. He's a phenomenal receiving tight end. He and Kyler had an immediate rapport with one another. And I feel like he'd be a nice, you know, continuation and fit. And then you go get a guy like a Jeremy Rucker in the fourth round. I know they don't have a fourth round pick. I'm just throwing stuff out there. But, you know, you go get a Jeremy Rucker in the third round or the fourth round, a guy that's a good blocking tight end that could be a really solid two-way tight end, and you go from there. If the money is, you're talking, you know, $4 million over 2 years, so $2 million a year, I'd prefer Ertz over Williams just because of the health situation. But you know, I don't think I can go above $8 million for Ertz.
Yeah, it's interesting because of where Max is in his career, because he's going to be 28 years old, which means he still has, that's kind of prime. And he was playing the best football of his career last season.
Oh, 100%.
So, and yeah. I didn't realize that, because I figured that I was like, oh, he's probably at the point, I thought he was older, just off the top of my head, I hadn't looked it up. And I thought maybe he was at the point of his career where coming off that injury, he would take that lesser deal, because if you brought back Ertz and Williams, you are really good in that tight end room, because it doesn't matter who your third and fourth tight ends are. Honestly, it doesn't. If they're your third and fourth tight ends, they're your third and fourth tight ends.
Right. And maybe he is willing to do that. Maybe he's willing to come in and, you know, Ertz is going to say, hey, I'll take 7. And Williams say, hey, I'll take 4 instead of, you know, 8 and 6. Okay. So, you know, if you can do 2 for $14 million and 2 for $8 million, like, that's a big deal. But to your point, like a guy like Max, who's having a career year, who's 28, and you know what he may do? I mean, honestly, one of the things that Max might do, 1 year, $5 million deal, to try to then go at 29 to be his, you know, to get a 4 year, $36 million deal type of thing, right? Like, because he might only end up getting, you know, a 3 year, $15 million offer. And maybe he says, hey, I'm going to stay healthy. Because remember, it's not like, as much as we just talked about his injuries, it's not like this injury was non-contact. Like this was just a freak, you know, hit
type. Yeah, thing. Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe he's willing to come in at 1, 3.5 with incentives up to 5. And he's like, yeah, 100%. I'm there. I'll do it.
That would be fantastic. But if I had a priority, it's Ertz because of what he means to Kyler. And I think with a full season, I think that really does a lot to the passing game.
I agree. And that's the thing is if you have, you know, if you have Hopkins, Moore, Ertz, and whoever else, you know, I think you're in a good spot.
Yes. The offensive line is interesting. One offensive lineman is a free agent. It's only Max Garcia. Do you re-sign him? He's come back. He had 1 year deals each of the last 3 years. He had a 1 year deal, 1 year deal, 1 year deal. I don't know if he's gotten paid any more than the league or much more than the league minimum in his career.
Yeah, he was just over 1.1 last year. I'm assuming you offer him the same thing.
As a Pro Bowl alternate, Max Garcia, do you think he gets a sweeter deal, a multi-year offer from somewhere that's 2 years?
$10 million-ish.
$10 million or 2 years, $7 million, 8 years. Kind of like that Justin Murray contract that they gave Murray a couple of years ago.
And if he does, yeah, go get it, man. Like, go get it.
I'd like to bring him back but not for much. That's the thing. It's like, if he can get more money somewhere else, great. But I don't want to count on him to be a starter because he's a low-end starter. Or maybe he's better than we think because the league certainly thought he was better, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but the thing is, I'm kind of with you. If you can get him for 2.5, or, you know, and then obviously anything 1 year to the equivalent of that, you do it. If he wants to go get, you know, a 3.9, good luck, man. Like, he's going to be 31 this year. He's been a, you know, kind of a journeyman. He's made good money in his career. He's made over $6 million in his career. So he's had a nice career. He's made over $8 million in his career. He's had a nice career for a fourth round, you know, pick. Go, you know, if you can get one, you know, if you can get one contract that's equal to your entire career earnings,
go get
Jess and I would never begrudge it.
No, never.
I would just not offered if I'm the Cardinals. I don't see the value there.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on. Talk about the defensive front seven. We'll look at the defensive line, the edge defenders, and the inside linebackers. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. On the defensive line, there really aren't any names of note. You've got Jack Crawford, who was on injured reserve all year, a decade-plus veteran in the league, Michael Dogby, who's a restricted free agent, and Corey Peters. Jack Crawford, whatever, we didn't know, but since Dogby is a restricted free agent, first off, he turned into a decent rotational player. Do you bother with a tender offer, even if it's just the first right of refusal? Well, I guess it would be the lowest one, which would, since he was a seventh round pick, would mean they get a seventh rounder compensation. Do you bother with that? Because do you want to commit to a guy like Dogby at $2.5 million?
Yeah, I don't want, especially right now, I don't want him at $2.5 million. I think he's talented, and you know, if he tests the market and doesn't get that $2.5 million, you welcome him back with open arms. I'm just not offering him $2.5 million.
Though you might, so we've seen from a couple of the times before, if you give him 2 years, $3.5 million, like you give him a Tanner Vallejo type contract.
Yeah, absolutely. If you can get him for under, you know, if you can get him for under $2 million a year, he's proven to be an incredible, you know, valued backup guy.
Jack Crawford, I don't care about. Corey Peters.
He's a late.
Yeah,
you know, camp add if he wants to play again type guy, where you just bring him in for that $1.1 million.
Absolutely. And then we go to the outside linebackers, the edge. Kylie Fitz, concussion into the season. He's a restricted free agent. I definitely don't tag him. And sure, if you want to sign him to a minimum deal, which is probably all that he's going to get, if I'm okay with him coming back battling for a spot. But then you've got the big one, Chandler Jones, and you've also got Dennis Gardeck, both unrestricted free agents. Chandler Jones is the big one because do you re-sign him? Do you franchise him? Do you let him walk?
So I've read his market value is between 14 and 16 and a half. So if you could get him for 2 for $30, would you do it?
I think so. Especially, again, another team captain. I think he was, and I know this, like it's not a I know, but I know from people who know, Chandler was one of the driving forces for J.J. Watt coming to the team. And I think if they were to, like, let him go, that, well, one, we know that Chandler wasn't thrilled with how the front office handled things. That might affect things in the locker room a little bit, depending on how things play out. Now, I think they're going to let him walk, but as long as they have a plan for that position...
Yeah, they don't have one of those right now.
They don't. So then you have to go out and make sure that you either get a Marcus Golden equivalent type of production and draft someone to have in the draft. But I would almost franchise him because of where the situation is with the team. Because JJ's got one more year, and you kind of keep those guys. You go with the young guys behind them in Collins and Simmons, but you keep the veterans, so you've got Chandler and Marcus and JJ up front to kind of try and keep that group together as much as you can without overhauling it completely. That said, he's not the same pass rusher he was. But he's still pretty good. The problem is his low games is where he's just not. He still led the team in QB hits. He still led the team in pressures. He didn't lead in sacks. So he was still overall their most consistent pass rusher. And we have to look at the fact that he dealt with COVID in the middle of the year as well. So that was probably part of the issue of the production in the middle of the year.
Yeah, and if you don't get him, I mean, some of the names that you have out there, like a Randy Gregory, Charles Harris. I mean, I don't think Hassan Reddick's coming back here.
Interesting one would be an interesting 2-year deal, I think, would be if you have, because, but it wasn't good enough down the stretch when they had Hassan and Marcus. The defense wasn't good enough in 2020 when they had Hassan and Marcus playing the outside linebacker positions.
Right. And so, you know, like I said, like if you could get like a Charles Harris for like, and because he's 27, finally coming off a productive year, and you were to say give him like a 325 type of deal, I think you might do that. Or, you know, because Gregory is going to probably get 13 plus, whereas Harris is going to get like 8 plus. You know, this type of talent doesn't hit the market very often, right?
No, that's what's good. Pass rushers rarely, like your premier pass rushers, don't hit the market. They get franchised, they get extended. It just feels like the Cardinals are going to let Chandler go. Gardeck is an interesting one because they used the higher restricted tag. Do you want to bring him back to count on him to play more when he was really a specialty player in that package? Because size-wise, you can't count on him to be more than that.
Yeah.
But is he going to, you know... You cut Kennard. If you bring in a top, whether it's Chandler again or you bring in another pass rusher, you still need that third guy. And a third guy making $4-5 million isn't unheard of. The problem is Gardeck's pass rushing production was crazy flash in the pan in 2020 and then in 2021, but he was coming off a torn ACL. So that's a really tricky one for me.
If you had anything in the system, it makes it much easier, but you literally don't have anything.
unless they saw enough from Dimakeji to be that guy. Which,
right, to be a similar guy.
Which I don't know if they did.
So Marcus Golden. Yeah, and so, like, I mean, we'll float names next week or in a couple weeks, but, you know, like, I mean, the names out there, we talked a little bit about it. I mean, the biggest name you could probably afford is, like, a Jadeveon Clowney.
He's not a bad guy to have, but, oof, that durability.
Yeah.
Okay, let's look at the inside linebackers. They have one free agent. Now, they might create another one with Jordan Hicks, but Zeke Turner is their only free agent in the group. Stud special teamer to start things off. But two of his four seasons have been nicked up with injury. He missed a lot of last season. I know what the thing that makes Turner nice as a former defensive back. He was one of those Washington defensive backs the Cardinals have acquired, is that he is kind of the Simmons backup. He allows Vance Joseph to kind of do the same things with Turner as they do with Simmons in terms of moving around. That said, he's going to be a back of the room linebacker. So unless he's still a core special teamer, you're not paying him more than $2 to $3 million, are you?
No,
I'd say I based on what we've seen, because in terms of his production on special teams, you can still get that from other guys, because there are a ton of really high upside special teams players throughout the league and every year through the draft, or
right,
not through the draft.
Right, exactly. That's where you got to look at this point and see how you're going to be able to, you know, address that if it does come down to the fact that you can't afford to re-sign him.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk. And the last segment we're going to do, we're going to talk about the defensive backs, so cornerbacks and safeties, and then the specialists. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. Back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, and what we've got right now. Cornerbacks, there are two free agents of note. One is Robert Alford, who had a pectoral, whether it was another pec tear at the end of the year, but who knew how essential Alford would end up being and how solid a player. He very quietly had a very good year, although it wasn't flashy. And then you've got Antonio Hamilton. The problem with Alford is that durability, but if he's willing to come back again, it doesn't have to be the minimum, but if you're looking at anywhere from the minimum to about $3 million, I'd sign him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and you know, you look at what he got last year, he got sub $1 million. So if he comes back and he's like 2 years, $5 million, I think that's an easy go.
Yeah, right? And especially because then he can – you don't want – like, if you can get him on a minimum deal again, that'd be fantastic, because he's the – like, that way you don't – if he can be a starter, but you don't have to count on him to be a starter, because you've got Byron Murphy, you've got Marco Wilson, you do need – and what we said on the last show that we did, you need – two more corners that you can count on that you feel can play. If Alford is one of those two, I like it.
Right, exactly.
Antonio Hamilton is also an unrestricted free agent. Good special teamer. Scrappy defender who showed some versatility. Do you think he's going to have... Do you think he's going to have much interest, or is he going to be a minimum type player who'd resign?
Yeah, minimum camp body type guy that if somebody gets injured, you're very comfortable with him. But I mean, he just hasn't been able to hold up in the NFL game, and it's something that, you know, we've talked about and wondered about when they brought him on. We never were worried about his, you know, ability in coverage, and that's been something that we've, you know, seen is true. we just haven't seen him be able to stay healthy.
And then in the safeties, there's two special teams guys, Chris Banjo, Charles Washington. I think Banjo is a guy, and the interesting thing is James Wiggins, who's still on the roster, Deontay Thompson still on the roster, DT really hasn't done anything significant, but has been bad either. Are we at the point where Banjo and Washington you let go? I know Washington's injury hurt special teams because he's their number one gunner. But do you want to count on either one of those guys at this point? I think Banjo's, what is he going to be, a 32? Banjo.
Yeah.
So he is, he's 32 in a couple of days.
Yeah, he'll actually, yeah, so he's entering his league 32 year. I feel like Washington's more the priority here just because of the age difference. I mean, we're talking 3 full years. This is why you drafted James Wiggins, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you can get those guys back on veteran minimum deals, yes. Right. But more than that,
do those on vet mins. But like
more than that, I don't think so.
And at some point, you do have to start being like, okay, James, like you got to take over for one of these guys.
Yeah, yeah. Too bad he had the knee injury because he did. Like we both liked Wiggins coming out of school. The athleticism, the potential to be more than just a stud special teamer, but the potential where he could play. Now, it's going to be interesting at the position because Jalen Thompson is going to be a free agent after this next year. You know, we'll see what happens there. But the specialists, two of the three specialists, so their long snapper and their punter are both unrestricted free agents, while Matt Prater is under contract for another year. When either Brewer or Lee were missing, he was when they were both on the field, he was one of the best kickers in the NFL. Aaron Brewer, for me, is bring him back. It's just, I mean, you still, unless you have an eye on someone you worked with before, Aaron Brewer's fine. Bring him back. Andy leads the question, though. Personally, with the situation that the Cardinals are in, with Matt Prater, I bring both those guys back, and just
you're talking about just over $2.5 million for both of them on 1 year deals.
Yeah, I bring them both back. Just bring the gang back because you kind of need to go all in for this year before Kyler Murray's contract bumps. And so, yeah, as long as if you're committed to Prater as the kicker, you got to bring back the battery so that it's not wonky.
Correct. And, you know, you look at it, Brewer, you know, has been about 1.1, 1.2 every year since the Cardinals signed him in 2016. You know, I think that's what you have to do.
And other than that, that kind of takes it. I don't know about the money, but that's kind of...
I don't know where they're getting it from.
They'll make it work somehow.
Right, they'll always come up with it. That's what we do know.
Yeah, and with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We will not have a show next week, episode 348, our free agency preview, where we will talk about actual free agents around the league who might fit, predictions, hopes, wishes, that sort. We will be back in 2 weeks for that. So no show next week. Got 2 weeks from now where we will have our free agent preview. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Thanks as always for listening. We'll be back again in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.